Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Welcome to Breaking the Silence, live from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. It is great to have each and every one of you with us this evening, and we're going to have an unbelievable show tonight, a very emotional show tonight, a very raw show tonight, and the title of our program, Breaking the Silence, is so absolutely relevant in what we're talking about tonight with our guest. Welcome to Houston, Texas, which I believe is one of the best cities ever. It's my side of heaven, living here in Texas and being in Houston, but I do want to let you know something, that I want you to keep everybody in mind of what happened just across the street a couple nights ago at the Astro World, Fest. 8 innocent people in the crowd got trampled to death during a concert. And, they're still kind of, here at the medical center, which is right where all these lights are, right there behind me. That whole medical center is just reeling with pain and hurt of how they dealt with all the injuries and the deaths. And I can't fathom, but I know we need to do something better to protect our children and young adults when they go to concerts like that, when there's 50,000 people and they all kind of press into each other and they literally got crushed to death just a few nights ago. So we want to keep them in our thoughts and our prayers. If you want to get involved in our conversation tonight, feel free to call in. There's two different ways to do it. 888-627-6008. And that will get you the wonderful people at the best radio station in the world, BBS Radio. And they will answer the phone and they will patch you right through immediately. We'll try to screen calls, but not what you're asking. Just, hey, where are you from? So we can kind of welcome you into the program and we'll bring you right in. Or you can get right on right now. I'm looking at it right here out of the corner of my eye. Facebook, Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. While you're there, like us, follow us, and do all of that. But you can watch the program live there and you can comment right in the Facebook page as you're watching the show live. And my son Curtis will let me know whether there's any comments or questions later on in the program. So welcome to the show. I also want to kind of give you a warning. I always like to do this when I know we're going to talk about some very deep things. There could be triggers in tonight's program. So I just want to let you know that if something bothers you, if something triggers you in your own pain, in your own hurt, feel free to mute, step away, step out. Don't leave us, but you may want to just step away, catch your breath, get everything back in check, and then come back on if you can and watch the rest of the program. Because I think what our guest tonight has is something that a lot of people need to hear. And she has a craving inside of her soul to be able to tell other people about what's going on. And you're going to find out all about that this evening. 888-627-6008. Tonight we have Tanisha Bankston, and she is a mother of three children. Matter of fact, I think I just saw one of them photobomb her just on the camera right before we went on. Looks like an adorable little girl, right, Tanisha?
Oh, there she is. There she is again.
Tried to put her to sleep, but you know, that's okay. This is live, so we're doing fine. And we're going to talk about, and Tanisha has literally can check off these things in her life. She's a survivor, number one, of rape, of incest, of childhood sexual abuse, of trauma, and domestic violence. In the middle of all that, you can throw in bullying too. You may be able to throw in a little bit of trafficking in there with the way that her life went. There's just so many things that she wants to share, but most of all, she has already written this all down.
Her life went.
My pain is my power, and you can get it on Amazon. She wrote it this year, came out in May, and doing pretty good from what it looks like. I bought it on Kindle. You can actually, Tanisha, welcome to the program, but hold up the book, the hard copy, so everybody can see what this beautiful book looks like. Look at that picture. My pain is my power. And Tanisha, welcome to the program tonight. Thank you for being with me. So where are you actually at right now? Where do you reside at, Tanisha?
Oxford, Mississippi.
In Mississippi, awesome state of Mississippi. Welcome to the program. So tell me, Tanisha, right now, what do you do for a living? What do you do that you get up and you go to work every day? Or what's your life look like right now in your occupation?
Well, I'm self-employed and I'm a new self-published author. So I've been out selling my books and I'm also in financial services. So that's my job as well. I help families. I educate them on the importance of setting up a financial game plan, becoming financially independent and debt free. And I assist with mutual funds, RAs, kids' colleges account, like the 529 plans. And just out here raising awareness and being a financial advisor.
There you go. Tell me what started the process inside of your mind and your spirit to say, I want to put my life down on paper, and then I want the whole world to know about this. Because be honest, Tanisha, and I know you will, this is hard. And number two, not everybody believes you. And sometimes it's even more difficult to deal with family after you break the silence, correct? Tell me
correct.
Your story.
That is so true.
How did it come about you writing the book?
Well, as I got older, things started coming to me. And I've always said that I want to share my story. Like, it would never leave my mind. People would tell me to get over it and to just move forward with life. And it was easy for them to say that, but it was hard for me to just get over it because these things happen to me. And so I always just said, I'm going to be an author one day. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to be a speaker. And people are going to hear my story. People are going to hear my story. So years and years and years and years, the pandemic hit, of course, 2019. And I got a message from God like this year in January saying that it's time. It is time, because I would journal like every day, just write the same thing. Like, I would keep saying the same thing. Everything would just vividly, more things will come to me, more things will come to me. And I would just write. And so I say, you know, I just have to get this out there. I just have to write a book and just, I want to write a book and I just wanted to get it out there. And that's how it came about, because I just wasn't going anywhere. Yeah. And I don't think it'll ever go anywhere. So this
is the first book that you've ever written, correct?
Correct.
Let me applaud you. You write very well. It's wonderfully done. It's an easy read, but it's a raw read. Do you agree?
I
mean,
yes.
right to the topic. I mean, there's no fluff. And I like that. You're so brutally honest with what happened to you. How easy was that to reveal to not only your inner circle, but to the entire world?
Well, it wasn't easy, because I just cried writing it. But once I let it off, got it off of me, it was so easy. It was easy. But I didn't know that I would get backlash from, you know, some family members and naysayers.
Well, I think sometimes if you never get any kind of backlash, any kind of pushback, any kind of naysayers, I think that means that you're not causing much of an impact on people. When you drop a bigger rock in a pond, the ripple effect causes it to rock some people's boats. And don't let that discourage you. I think you're doing wonderful. And it's going to help a lot of people. I think that's the key, right?
Right, yes.
So tell me, Tanisha, in your own way and in your own depth that you want to, people that are listening around the world right now haven't heard the story. What happened to you? And why did, let's start off with this. Why did you use the title, My Pain Is My Power? Well, why did you pick that?
I picked that title. I was talking to a church member and I was telling her that I was, you know, I had been working on my book, writing a book because I was going to call it The Lost Child. And so we were just talking, and since I've been through so much pain, and now that I've broken silence and I spoke out, and she was like, well, your pain is your power. You're taking back your power. You're taking back charge of your life and everything that you've gone through and everything. That's powerful. That's a testimony. And so that's when I came up with the title, My Pain Is My Power.
You know, as I read your book, and I don't know if you meant to portray this, but at least this is what I received, that most of the time you were completely powerless. This wasn't anything that you had any control over. It happened to you over and over and over again with people that you knew, with family members, with people that you should have been able to trust. And your power was taken away from you. So I think it's a perfect title.
Thank you. That's correct. You're right.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the story. Let us in. When you first remembered the first instance of any kind of pain or abuse?
I was like 5 or 6, but the more I talked to, when I talked to my aunt, she said that she adopted me when I was 5. So I had to have been younger. But I was 5 or 6. But one day I was at my grandmother's house. She was living across the tracks from across from my great grandmother, and a friend of the family, the guy, he was there, and he was standing at the corner of the living room door on the wall, and my grandmother and her daughter, which was my aunt, they had all gone across to my great grandmother's house, and he didn't leave. He stood there, and you know, as a child, you're trying to fight your sleep, but you're just gonna fall asleep, right? So that's what happened. I fell asleep, and when I fell asleep, next thing I know, I felt something on top of me. I felt somebody, and when I opened my eyes, he had his hand over my mouth, and you know, I was just trying to scream and trying to kick, but he was so strong. Like I said, I was 5, and he just forced himself inside of me, and somehow I managed to kick him off of me because, you know, he was hurting me. He got my legs open and he forced himself inside of me, and I managed to kick him off of me somehow, like I said, and I ran across the track to my mom, crying to her, telling her that, you know, he had just touched me. I didn't know what the word rape meant. I didn't know anything about rape. And because I had never been taught, you know, if anybody tries to do anything to you, you know, tell somebody, or to know that you have the right to say no. And so my mom called the ambulance, and the ambulance came, and I was standing there crying, and it's like they were checking me out in the back of the ambulance. And it was like that moment, I felt my brain do a shift. It's like my brain did a shift. Like I went from this happy child to this sad lost child. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but like, yeah. I actually felt my brain do a shift. It's just like that moment when that happened to me, it did something to me. And I had never been the same again. And I was taken to the hospital. And my mom said she wasn't able to come to the bag. Why, I don't know, because I was just a kid. And they took me into a room. I remember seeing blood on the sheets. And like I said, my mom said that they wouldn't let her back there in the room with me. And I remember going to like this special hospital. I could vividly see everything. I remember looking out of this foggy window, me as this little girl in this gown, and me having to learn how to walk again, and just my legs being messed up.
Yeah. In all the people that I've ever interviewed and dealt with and talked about and counseled with around the country at the conferences I've been at and speaking and things, I've never had anyone that was traumatized as much or abused as much in this situation where you said you had to learn to walk again. Okay. Was it that forceful of trauma? Did it disconnect something up here to where you was unable to, or were you physically unable to walk and you just literally had to learn to do it again? Explain that, because that's so traumatic.
I was physically, my mom said that he had to rupture me so bad down there that the doctor said that I wouldn't be able to have kids, but I don't understand why he never got locked up. My mom said that he told them that he didn't touch me. He was the only man there, and I knew that he had touched me and what he had done to me. But my family didn't believe me. Obviously, the hospital, the police didn't believe me either, because all the evidence was there. I had to learn how to walk again.
With blood being on the sheets and being on your clothes, what did they think happened to you? Well, what would cause the bleeding? It just doesn't happen at five years old.
Right. I want to know the same thing. Like, I really want to know, because I was failed. I was failed. You know, was affecting me. Now, me learning how to walk again, not enough, you know? I really had to learn how to walk again. I was taken to a special place, and I obviously had therapy because I had to have to learn how to rewalk. Because he had damaged me so bad.
Wow. Tanisha, you mentioned in your book, at this point of the story in your book, that no one in your family or no one that you came across believed you. Was there not one person that leaned into you and said, I'm with you? Or did everybody look away?
Everybody looked away. Nobody believed you. Well, one of my aunts, when I spoke, I did a live last year. She was like, you spoke out, and she said that she believed me, but nothing was ever done. No, I mean, you know, my family knew about it and nothing was ever done. And I was adopted. I was separated from my mom, taken away from her then, you know, after that had happened. So
now, did this man that was a neighborhood person or whatever that was at your house that raped you at five or six, did he ever come in contact with you again? Did he ever do it again?
No, he never did it again. But I had confronted him like years ago as being older. He said that he don't know why my family keeps telling me that. They didn't tell me that. I'm the one who's telling them that, because I knew he had done it. And he said that he would never do that to me. And my grandmother, she was like, he didn't do that. He told me he didn't do that to you. I mean, of course, somebody's going to tell you they didn't do that because they don't want to own up to it. So, you know, I just feel like, you know, he should have been locked up, and I've been locked up in my mind all these years until I was healed, you know, delivered and set free.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, we're going to take our first break. 888-627-6008. If you want to get involved in the conversation tonight, feel free to call in. But on the other side of this, Tanisha, I really want to, because, you know, if this was the only thing that ever happened to you, that's enough to make such an impact on somebody's life and their mental health and the way the brain grows and the way that you handle different things in your life. Unbelievable amount of trauma in this one event. But to let all the listeners know, this is just the beginning. We're going to find out on the other side of this break what happened, I believe, like when you're seven. It's coming right down the road, and things started to snowball even more. And we're going to talk about that right on the other side of this first commercial break. Stay with us. Get on the line. Let somebody know to join us tonight at 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back to Breaking the Silence. We're coming into our second segment. Next week, we want to let you know that, you know, tonight's show is about somebody's story, about them breaking their own silence and sharing that. And that's what the program's all about. A lot of times we have medical personnel on, professionals and social workers and counselors to help us understand how a child is damaged and how they can cope with it. I think in the next week or two, we're going to have a two-part program with an attorney here in Houston and one of his clients, I think that's out in New York, that's going to be talking about something called court-ordered rape, an unbelievable situation and what's happening in our world, and we're going to be talking about that. But tonight we have Tanisha Bankston from the awesome state of Mississippi, and she just told us her first segment of her first episode, and I think she's probably trying to get her little one down to sleep, and when I see her face come back on the screen, we'll bring her back in. And here she comes. Tanisha, welcome back. 888-627-6008, and it looks like we have some people on the Facebook watching in. Thank you for that. Then after this event, you said that you felt something shifted in your brain, literally. Did anything change from how you slept, how you handle things day to day? Did you go from this happy, go-lucky girl to somebody that was more alone, more quiet? Well, how did you handle that, Tanisha?
I went from happy to like this sad little girl that was isolated, was labeled as shy, and just, I was just different because I remember playing a lot with my friends and my cousins, but when that happened, it just did something to me. Like I said, I just went in a shell. Just like, yeah. I went into a shell that I never came out of.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we have one of your friends. I don't know what the friend's name is, but we're going to have them introduce themselves on the line right now that wants to share some support with you. Caller, are you there this evening? Have a comment or a question for Tanisha?
Hi, Tanisha, my friend. You've always been very supportive and you're a positive role model. I'm here to support you tonight and to listen to you. I'm here for you, girl.
Thank you so much, Darlene. I'm glad you're on. Thank you.
Thanks, Darlene, so much for calling and supporting. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, Tanisha, sorry about that, darling. When did the next episode or the next trauma enter into your childhood?
When I was 10 years old.
Okay, so a few years later.
Yes, a few years later. I was adopted by my aunt, and the abuse continued to happen. The rape continued to happen. Yes,
by this aunt's boyfriend?
By one of my aunt's boyfriend.
One of your aunt's boyfriends. Okay. Is this a place where he would take you to what they call the dog pound?
Yes, he would take me to what was called the dog pound and get me to lay down and have sex with me. And he would give me penny wrappers with pennies, dimes, and $1 bills.
Just to kind of pay you off to quiet you up and...
Right, yes. Until he told me not to tell anybody. And, you know, I didn't tell anybody because when I spoke out when I was 5 or 6, nobody believed me. So I was like, who's going to believe me if I said anything? And then I had so much fear that was instilled in me.
Now, when the events happened when you were 11, was this by somebody else? I think it had something to do with, like, the candy store?
Yes. The candy
so
store
somebody
grandson.
Somebody else completely different.
Yes, it was another man. The neighborhood candy man grandson. And they all were like in their 30s. And I was 5 or 6 the first time, 10 the second time, 11 the third time. And he had sex with me for years. And he ruptured my anus, would have sex with me on my cycle and have me miss school and take me to a motel. His friends got them a room for us, you know, for him. I was there because he took me there. And, you know, they never said anything. Like, why is this grown man having sex with this child? You know, he would have me miss school, knock at my window at night. You know, I would see a shadow. I don't understand why I didn't have a curtain or a blind at my window. And he would just be there some nights watching me sleep. And while I just lay in the bed, sleep.
Okay. And then something happened a couple years later. Probably maybe a very impactful thing happened to you with you becoming pregnant.
Yes. When I turned 13, my cousin husband, he had started having sex with me. He ended up getting me pregnant and coming inside of me. I didn't know that I would become pregnant of him doing that to me. And so I became pregnant at 13 and had my first child at 14 by my cousin's husband.
Okay, so your cousin's husband molests you. And he's in his late 20s, 30s, early 30s?
He was in his 30s. He was 33 and I was 13.
Wow. And you become pregnant and you have a discussion with your father that obviously your mother and your father must have separated.
Yes.
Divorced. And he didn't accept that you were going to have this baby.
Right.
And that affected the relationship with him.
Right. He said that wasn't it. He said he wanted me to be closer with my family, but why all of a sudden when I became pregnant, you sent me to live permanently with my aunt and I never lived with him again. And that's when I really needed him because no trauma, no abuse or anything happened to me while I was there. You know, I was being disciplined, I was being structured and I was being loved, but after I became pregnant, that was it. And when the nurse at the health department mentioned to me about an abortion, I don't know if my dad and my stepmom had asked, you know, mentioned an abortion to them or what. I asked the nurse, what did an abortion mean? Because I didn't know what any of that meant. I'm 13. I wasn't taught any of that. And I just felt like, you know, my dad gave up on me. I already didn't have my mom. She was incarcerated, you know, most of my life, my childhood. So And I was living with my aunt where I was being abused. She didn't abuse me, but the men, it's like they just had access to me. I wasn't protected. And my cousin husband, you know, had sex with me, got me pregnant. He would come to my aunt's house and have sex with me. And then he would just leave like it was nothing.
In chapter five, you wrote a quote, and I want to read this quote to you. And it goes exactly like this in chapter five of your book. I didn't feel loved by my family. How do you rate that on the scale of all the pain that you had experienced up to that time? Also on top of that, not feeling loved from the people that ought to be loving you.
Just the rate is just zero because I didn't feel no love at all. I didn't feel one inch of love from anybody. I didn't have anybody.
Mm-hmm. So you're like 13 years old.
I just had to love myself.
Yeah. 13 years old, a child, pregnant, getting ready to have a child. And no one there to help and support. And you go through with this pregnancy, correct? And okay. This is one of your daughters?
Yes, she's 18 now.
And then something happened when you were 14. So like a year after you had a child?
Well, the same year after I had her. I was 14 when I had her. So when I still at the age of 14... another neighborhood guy, which is my son's dad now, he ended up calling me to his house, his aunt's house, and I went over there and he manipulated me into having sex with him, and I ended up in a domestic violence relationship with him from the age of 14 to the age of 23. He beat me, he spit on me, told me I'd never be anything, and nobody ever protected me against that, you know, domestic violence relationship. Like,
okay, so you're 14, just having a newborn. He's 23 and gets involved in your life and the domestic violence or the absolute control, it sounds like, by the book. There was just a lot of manipulation, control, yelling. That domestic violence was... a classic domestic violence case in that situation, it sounded like, from somebody that was obviously 10, 11 years older than you, that shouldn't even been dealing with a child in that manner. And this is the father of your second child?
Yes, correct.
And you had that child, what, when you were 17?
Correct.
Was alcohol involved in that relationship?
Yes, he was a bad alcoholic.
Yeah. And then something happened, I believe, maybe he was 18. You get arrested.
Yes.
And how did that come about?
My eldest brother, he thought that my son dad was jumping on me because he was so abusive and he was yelling at me all the time, and one day my brother, he ended up picking up a rusty gun and hitting my son dad in the top of the head, and I was trying to break up the fight, and I think my baby brother called the police, and they took me to jail. They took my son dad to the hospital and took me and my brother to jail, and I was arrested and charged, and I spent 8 hours in jail for something that I didn't do. And
this just adds to the layers of a life that had been out of control, that you couldn't control, but nobody was being around you to be able to help you control. And then on top of that, you have the grief of losing your brother, I think within the next year, correct?
Correct. The next year, the same one who end up fighting my son dad. I lost him to a tragic death. He chewed some drugs and it busted his heart, exploded in him, and he died. So I didn't even get a chance to really know him because we all were separated at a young age. And he moved out from his grandparents when he turned 18. And then next year he passed away.
So help me understand how a child that has to grow up quick in this world, because you're kind of on your own, having a major impact and trauma at five, and then almost continually up to the age of 18, 19 years old, how do you maintain any type of stability in your emotional constitution, in your mental stability? How did you endure all of those instances in your life? How did you make it through?
I think just going to school, because school was just like my way out of everything. I was just so focused on school, and because I really don't know. I think school, because I was just all about school, going to school, and because I knew if I could go to school, I was away from everything, and through college and everything. And I had to take out a whole lot of student loans to pay bills and everything, because he didn't work and it was just me. And I was making $5.35 at the time working at Wendy's. And I had two babies and a car note and rent. And that was just a lot.
So was school kind of your safe haven, your place where you could go in and it was fairly safe? You knew you wasn't going to be hurt there?
Yes.
Yeah. Even though, did you experience any bullying? I mean, when you're 13 years old and you have a child, how did that affect school?
Well, I was bullied a lot in school. So I was just, my feelings were just hurt. Yeah. My feelings, you know, I didn't talk to anybody. I was just shut down. People would say that Tanisha likes to be in a relationship with grown men. She's not going to talk to you because she like grown men. But that was not my case. Like, I didn't want to be with a grown man. I was wanting help, but I never received help from anybody at school, no counselors or nobody, no kind of therapy or anything.
Yeah, this wasn't your choice. This was something that was thrown upon you.
Right.
At 13, 14 years old, you don't decide, you know, I think I'll have an older man in his 20s.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. On the other side, we're going to take our last commercial break now, and 888-627-6008. On the other side, Tanisha, I want to find out now, as we turn the corner into the last segment when we come back. Then all of a sudden, a few years later, you fall in love. And at 23, I believe you mentioned that in your book. We're going to find out a little bit more about that. And then we're going to find out what happens when you found God and start giving people some insight into hope and endurance and resiliency and how to be an overcomer and how to not be the victim and be a victor. And we're going to talk about some of those items on the other side of this last commercial break. Stay with us, 888-627-6008, if you want to get involved in the conversation. We'll be right back after this last commercial break.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book, that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back to Breaking the Silence. We're being heard tonight completely around the world. I just love technology here on BBS Radio. And we're on Facebook also, and I don't know how many other platforms tonight. But next week, this will actually go out to the podcast world, and it will be available, archived, and however that works. I don't know how that works. I don't even know how television works. But anyway, that all happens next week, and you'll be able to get that right on your iPhone. You can just download it, and you can, hey Siri, play Breaking the Silence. Oh, she's going to do it. I better not do that. Oh, now she's going to talk to me. I'm sorry. Yeah. She wants to play my show after I said that. But you can do that and get the archives of the program and everything. And tonight we have Tanisha Bankston from Mississippi, and she's been telling us about her pain and her abuse and her story that is really a lot for one person to endure. There's a quote, another quote I wrote down in chapter 18 of your book. And I want to briefly touch on this if we can. And you wrote this: I lost my inner voice when I was raped at the tender age of 5 or 6 years old. I found my inner voice at the age of 32, after 27 years of being trapped. Explain that quote to me. Explain what happened and then how you ended up breaking out of that and regaining and re-grabbing a hold of that inner voice.
Like I said, when I was raped at the age of 5 or 6 and not being believed in, like feeling that, having that shift done to my brain and causing me to be trapped in a cocoon for all these years, and just being labeled as shy and being bullied, and from everything that I had gone through, you know, all the hurt and all the pain. And it was just one day I had shared a post on in an ADHD group about my teenage kids, how I was having trouble with them. And I also mentioned how about my life story. I'm a survivor and all the things that I'm a survivor of. And the lady introduced me to a group called NASCA, a support group. And I shared my story in there, and I was asked if I wanted to speak on NASCA's talk show. And so I did. So July 3rd, 2020, I spoke on there, and it was just like everything that I had held in from the age of 5 or 6, age of 5, everything that I hadn't gone through, and to 32 years old, it's just, everything just came off of me. And that's when I broke silence. And then that's when I rediscovered my voice and knew that my voice, and that there were people who told me that they believed me. If nobody else believed you, Tanisha, I believe you. So there was my hope right then. Like, I know that, okay, I have supporters. I have, you know, I have people who believe me and everything. And from that moment, I haven't stopped speaking. I haven't stopped sharing my story. And I just let everything out, just let it out, and just went with it, and just put it all in a book, and just put it out there in the world for everybody to hear and see it.
Yeah. If somebody is listening in tonight, Tanisha, and they're saying, wait, I'm right in the middle of one of these episodes in my own life. What words of wisdom do you have as being someone that has gone through it and now on the victory side of it and using it to help other people? But what would you tell them if they were eyeball to eyeball with you right this evening and say, Tanisha, what do I do? How can you help me?
I would say find somebody who you can trust, who you feel like you can trust, and get in the support groups where the groups are private, where you can just let everything out, and to journal, write everything down, and suggest, you know, that there are support groups out here. There are so many different resources out here, and to just pray. That's what got me through all of this. Yeah. About having the support, even though my family didn't support me, but other people supported me, like in these support private groups that I can just vent, share, and just let everything out. And therapy, started seeing therapy, seeing a counselor and a therapist.
Yeah.
Talking to somebody who would trust me and believe me.
Right. Does anyone in your family, have they turned around and saying, hey, second thought, maybe this did happen. I do support you. Or pretty well, they've ridden this off as this didn't happen to her.
No, nobody ever said anything. I was told actually by one of my family members that, Tanisha, you were being fast and you just provoked them and you knew what you were doing. And
this was your fault.
It was my fault. And I just, you know, cried because from the person who I thought would say different, didn't. So nobody has said anything, like, you know, no. They still just don't believe me. People say I'm just doing this for attention and why didn't I say something? Just all kinds of things. So I still don't have that support from my family and some of the naysayers that are friends of the family.
You know, if any of your family's watching tonight or going to be listening to this program later, I have a few words for them. Family sticks with family. And I think in this day and age, if anybody ever gets into a situation to where someone in a family member's life comes to, if your son or daughter or your sister or brother says something, the first thing family ought to do is to believe and support. The last thing they shouldn't do is to push away and not believe them. There's no benefit of anything, Tanisha, that you had to say in this situation that would have benefited you to make this up. Nobody wants to say, hey, I've been sexually abused. Nobody wants to be put in that category. There's nothing glamorous in that. And why family doesn't take a deep breath and go, hey, wait, we have situations. Let's be honest. Tanisha, what family in Texas or Mississippi doesn't have issues? They all do. And when we deny them, it makes the issues even worse. And I just hope that people, especially parents, will rally around their kids and trust and believe first until something happens that maybe dismisses that. And it could be false, but always trust first. Always lean into your family members. That's what it's all about. Do you have any advice, Tanisha, for parents?
To just, like you say, trust, believe your child, pay attention to them, especially when they start being different or acting different. If they go somewhere, come back different. And if they tell you something, don't just brush them off. Pay attention to them and just listen and watch.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, I don't believe I've read it in your book, but tell me if I'm wrong. And if not, still, I'm interested in what happened in your childhood. Did anything besides you being shy, being reserved, after that incident, the first incident when you were 5 or 6 of being raped, was there any other red flags that family members should have picked up on? Did you have nightmares? Did you have any type of bedwetting? Did you have any fluctuation in grades, roller coaster experiences? Did you have any rage? All of, you know, these are all kind of signals and flags of, hey, wait, something's happening to my son or something's happening to my daughter. I'm seeing these flags. Did you have any of those flags that came up in your life?
Yes, my grades started failing. I actually failed kindergarten. I missed over 60 days. I couldn't function. I couldn't focus. I stopped. I just couldn't pay attention in school. Like, I was just distracted, and just every little thing would just throw me off.
So did they label you then with these labels that we place on kids, ADHD, anything like that when you were a child? Just said, she just can't keep attention. She's just one of those rambunctious kids that can't pay attention to anything. Or what did they do with you?
I don't think they labeled me as ADHD, but I was put in like a special ed class, for a slow learner. I remember being put in a class like that.
And let me tell you, Tanisha, from my understanding of your education ability, that was the absolute worst place for you to be, because Olive really was a very brilliant child that is actually carrying baggage that a six-year-old shouldn't have to be carrying in their life, and it affects the way everything processes up here. And it makes them look like, what does education system do back in those days, especially put them in special ed. They have a problem. You had problems, but it wasn't from that. It was what was being done to you. Yeah. So we only have a couple minutes left. Tell me about you finding God. We have about a minute left. God.
Me finding God, I just started picking up my Bible and just reading and meditating on the word and just writing and learning to understand and everything. And I started having dreams a lot and started having dreams of walking with Moses. And just one morning I got up, God had spoke to me and said that if you want me to heal you from all of this, your pain, your past, and everything, he said, I want you to get up and praise me in front of your boyfriend. And I was scared, and I told my boyfriend, and he said, Tanisha, well, if God told you to do that, you have to do that. So I got up, and I ran from his bedroom to the living room, and then I did it again. I still had shyness in me, the fear. And so I did it again a few times, and next thing I know, I just started speaking in tongues, just started speaking in good tongues and praising God. And then there was that moment. It was like all the pain and everything had came off of me. It's like God delivered me from my pain. And I spoke in tongues for like 3-4 days, just started speaking in tongues, just praising God, praising God, just praising God. And so he delivered me September 4th, 2020.
And he's going to use now this story that the devil thought was going to destroy you. God's going to use this story to change a lot of people's lives and make a positive impact on them. Tanisha, I want to thank you for being on the program tonight. Thank you for sharing. I wish we had another hour to talk. Maybe we'll do it again sometime and at your next book, or if you want to come back on, we'd love to have you. My pain is my power is the book, and you can get it right on Amazon right now. Download a Kindle and you can start reading it tonight. Tanisha, with only about 30 seconds left, if somebody, you have a webpage, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, what's that webpage?
My webpage is www.mypainismypower.com.
That's easy.
So the title of my book.com, and my book is on Amazon, and it just got approved to be on Barnes & Noble. So it's just uploaded to Barnes & Noble like a few days ago. And I'm on all the social medias, Facebook, LinkedIn, under Tanisha Bankston.
Thank you, Tanisha, for joining us tonight. And I want everybody, if you get the book, make sure you follow it, post a review, tell people about it, pass it along, and help her out to tell the story to the world. To be able to help other people. Thank you, Tanisha, for being with us tonight. God bless you.
Thank you.
Like we like to do every Sunday night, we always want to let you know that no matter what you're going through, and Tanisha is a perfect example of this, folks, no matter what kind of pain you've endured, I want to let you know there's always hope. She could have gave up a long time ago, but she hung in there. She found the hope. She dug deep, and you can do the same. Take her advice. Find somebody that you trust and talk to. journal, let it out, get help. But let me tell you, reach out to her, reach out to me, and we'll listen. We'll be there. There's always, always hope. Join us right here next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time, live from Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking Silence. Have an awesome week. God bless. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.